Today is May 26, 2019. This is the Fancy Ramen Podcast. I'm here with my co-host Neil and Cookie.
Hello.
Today we talk about
Game of Thrones and a little bit of Oculus Quest talk. It's a very beautiful thing.
So welcome back, everyone. We took a week off while I was out of town. How has everyone been?
You know, I took my deck apart, and I've been slowly putting it back together. That's been my life.
I'm feeling like a second-rate champion today.
Does that mean you, first and foremost, did you start the deck, Cookie, on Saturday, or?
Nah. We took it apart last weekend, took it down, and we've been building it back up all week.
And Scott, does that mean you got second at your
tourney? Yes, it does. Yeah, I played in a tennis tournament this weekend. We went 3-0 and then got stomped on the fourth game, but that means we got to take second place for the bracket we played in. So that was pretty good. That felt really good, actually. The two guys that we played against were head and shoulders better than anyone else we played. And so I
didn't
feel
so bad getting
crushed. Did
they have substantially less dandruff?
They were really old guys, so they might have more. I think they're more Delsum Blue guys.
If either of you want to elaborate on your ventures, I mean, feel free.
I want to hear more about Cookie's big deck energy.
We
sending deck picks across social media.
Higgs, yeah. So yeah, we were going to just replace the top floorboards, and then after taking some of those off and seeing where the posts were rotted at, and just being able to push one of the posts out of the ground, like at ground level, where there should have been like 3 feet of posts in the ground. Yeah, so we just took it all down and have been slowly building it up.
How excited, though, were you when you found the rot to, like, completely redo the deck? Because you're the kind of project guy that I feel like as soon as you see that, you're like, hell yeah, we get to just scrap the whole thing.
So, construction-wise, nah, that ain't my jam. I don't want to do construction type of projects. I want to do, like, little niche projects. Build a table here or there. Little things. Also things that people aren't going to be standing on.
Yeah.
But the deck's not wobbly, and it's actually a lot safer than it was before. Which I guess makes sense now that there are any rotting posts. But it's going slowly. Cutting custom stairs tomorrow, and basically been took off a day of work, and then just pretty much every day after work just been doing that. And I got a new toy. I also guess I forgot I got a new toy. It's the Oculus Quest. So
I'll
play with that a little bit.
That's the little headset that's sitting on your desk.
But yeah, week-wise, though, non-video game related, I started watching Ace of Diamonds, the anime.
That is a baseball sports anime, correct?
It is a baseball sports anime. After I caught up on Cinderella 9, which is also a baseball sports anime, I was like, well, I finished Cinderella 9, which is an anime about girls at a co-ed high school starting an all-girls hardball baseball team instead of, like, softball. And it's cute and full of drama and adorable. And then I was like, okay, well, let's get real baseball on. Ace of Diamonds, which is about a country kid getting sponsored and going to Tokyo to be a pitcher on a prestigious high school's baseball team.
They
and
just
his trials and tribulations.
Do they just pluck him right out of rural, well, that's a hard word, Alabama, or is he from the country, or is he from out in the country in Japan?
I think it was rural Kentucky.
Okay.
But yeah, out in the country in Japan. I don't think they ever said where he was, but it's nifty so far. Got lots of catching up to do.
I was just thinking about did you guys ever play backyard baseball or any of the backyard games?
Yes.
Would you watch an anime where Pete Wheeler, the kid with the oblong head and the red hair who talked with a southern drawl, would you watch an anime with him as the protagonist? Because I think if I wanted to watch a sports anime, it would definitely be with Pete Wheeler as the protagonist.
I'd be fine with that. I'm always fine with the sports anime, though.
Yeah.
That really gets my blood boiling. Sports animes.
So you've already seen iShield 21, then?
I have not.
What? Oh, okay. I don't know if I like sports animes, but iShield 21 is how I understand real football to work.
Dude, all sports animes teach you everything about how all sports work.
I never played tennis before I made my varsity high school team. I just watched Prince of Tennis and then Prince of Tennis 2, and that seemed to work just fine.
Yeah, that's all you need. That's all you need. But yeah, just watching a couple of animes, all my breaks and stuff, and building a deck. I'll talk about the Oculus when we get to games.
Nice.
What you been up to? You second-rate winner?
Yeah, I mean, second-rate winning feels pretty damn good. I'm trying to just fit in more tennis. It's been real rainy and shitty out here, actually. If we wouldn't have had the tournament in an indoor course, I don't think we would have been able to have a tournament at all. But I'd like to go hiking once it's not muddy and gross and wet, but I've been inside watching a lot of shows recently, especially with Sierra being out of town. It's just been me and my dog cuddled up watching shows on Netflix. I've picked up Maniac, and I'm almost done with that, which is maybe one of my favorite things I've watched this year so far.
Ooh, big praise.
It is, but also Game of Thrones this year kind of gave it a clear lane to victory.
Did Neil say something or did he just mouth something?
I think Neil was trying to say something. Oh, no, he's gone silent. Oh. Well, okay, my Game of Thrones critique was too hot for Neil. He has left the podcast. This is fine. Unfortunately, I really don't have any other cool stuff to talk about. It's been going on in my life. I ate a plate of nachos with my family at a local establishment that's served on top of a beer keg.
Naked female? Nope, beer keg. Beer keg. I was close.
Yeah, it's almost like one of those naked sushi places, but with a stainless steel disc that's like a foot and a half in diameter. It is enough nachos to make like a it was five of us at the time, and I think each one of us ate as much as we could to the point of getting sick, and we still couldn't finish it. It was obscene in its excess.
Too many nachos.
But it was good. I'll just have to, you know, pay for the fact that I ate like 2,000 calories in one sitting later.
Dude, speaking of eating 2,000 calories in one sitting, I've kind of been low-key forgetting to eat on these days that we've been working. It's pretty much just go outside, drink water.
Yeah, when I remodeled, I think I talked about this last winter on the podcast. I helped restore the roof to a cabin, and we went out and we'd eat like, I'd probably have 500 calories for breakfast, and then we wouldn't get, and breakfast would be like 7 in the morning. Then we wouldn't get home and eat until like 6 p.m. It's just like when you're busting your ass, sometimes your body's in a it's in a sympathetic nervous system state versus a parasympathetic nervous system state. So you're not really digesting as much. You're not hungry.
You'd be surprised, though, how much just having some carbs in the middle, like as with an early lunch, can help you in the afternoon.
Yeah, I know you read those tweets from Leon that I sent earlier about early lunch. But we could wax poetic and philosophical on that all day. Neil, I want to hear Game of Thrones hot take before we transition to you.
Has everyone watched Game of Thrones?
Yeah, we've all seen it.
Okay.
We've all already unsubscribed to HBO because there's nothing else.
Are you kidding me? I'm going to watch Chernobyl because radiation seems like that's a pretty good killer.
You should, watch
if the Night King can't do it, then I bet Radiation can. Radiation 2020.
Just a quick plug. You should watch the Drew Scanlon Cloth Maps episode where he goes to Chernobyl. It's an interesting little video documentary, travel documentary, behind the lens of a gaming journalist. Though, like, he is not really covering games in Chernobyl.
Right.
Oh, that guy.
Cloth Maps, Drew Scanlon, yeah. Formerly of Giant Bomb.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Anywho, just to really quickly preface, I checked out of Game of Thrones in a way at the start of the season that I don't think either of you necessarily had.
Okay.
In fact, I kind of checked out last season, and so I already had, like, lowered expectations on season 8, this final season, and the finale of Game of Thrones. So I hadn't actually even seen anything of this season until I had some hotel time on a business trip this past week, which is, again, also why we didn't record the episode last week. And so I went with the philosophy of right arrow key is being pressed whenever I'm bored. So I got through season 8 within one evening at a pretty...
And you probably had one episode that you just outright skipped.
I might have skipped a lot of episode, and because I had heard a lot of about what had happened from episodes 1 through 4. Mm-hmm. So I did skip through quite a bit of those, but just kind of to get a full the full context. But that's not what we're discussing. I guess we're giving impressions upon the finale as a whole.
Right, you were about to say it really came together and you were impressed at the execution.
Yes, exactly. No, I was actually more satisfied with the ending than I ever expected I could be. And not because it was well done, but because I believe that some of the major plot points are likely going to be reflected in the books. And if that belief is true, or if that is indeed true, I am very curious to see how George R. R. Martin takes some of these characters with their current points in the books, which are, you know, essentially season 4 and 5, and see where they go and how they end up developing into these characters. So Game of Thrones spoilers, absolutely massive, big endgame spoiler right here. Skip ahead like 3 minutes in case you don't want to be spoiled, but
he'll need a new soundbite because we're going to extend that past 3 minutes now.
What is really funny is that the big spoilers for Endgame and for Game of Thrones is that A. Stark dies. Nobody else made the connection, but I see the lines.
Wait, which Stark dies in Game of Thrones?
Tony Stark dies in Endgame, and then Ned, Robb, and Catelyn Stark all die throughout Game of Thrones.
Oh, you mean throughout the series?
Yeah.
Which, like,
they've
somehow
been giving us hints for years.
Magically, in the show, that is all about not having plot armor. The Starks are seemingly invincible from here on out, or, like, from, like, season 5, 6 and out. Like,
well,
not a Stark
that point,
dies.
You've got, like, the best Starks left.
Yeah, but there was a point where, I mean, Arya Stark, I think, is undoubtedly the best Stark. 100%.
Arya is the best Stark, and they already did kill Jon once. Yeah. There's no shock factor in killing him a second time.
And Jon is arguably not a Stark, but more importantly, Jon does, like, jack shit during the last season, and Sansa also does jack shit during the last season. And
but she does wear armor. I noted this every single time I watched. I was like, her outfit is very armor-heavy for someone who will likely never see combat.
Right.
Hey, man. She saw him in the crypts.
So, okay. So my whole thing here is that because none of the Starks did anything, maybe I feel better about the fact that Bran the Broken ends up as king. And again, I don't think my satisfaction over the finale of Game of Thrones is actually directly related to them doing anything that well, with a few exceptions,
right,
but more about what it means for the books. Because I could believe that Bran the Broken ends up being the king after A Song of Ice and Fire is finished.
Mm-hmm. Even though I thought at one point in time, I've seen screen caps of Bran saying, like, explicitly, I can't be king because I'm the three-eyed raven.
Hey, which is wonderful. Let's just talk about some not so forward-thinking script writing from past seasons and so forth.
Here's all I want to note is that the recurring theme with Dany is that she wants to break this wheel. She keeps saying that, like, I want to break the wheel. But then after she dies, like, essentially what she's done is created a power vacuum in which Bran the Broken can roll not one, but two wheels.
No, he rolls three wheels in there.
I think it's a three-wheeler. Is it a three-wheeler?
No, it's three wheels.
Okay.
Just because the other wheels are small does not make them any less of wheels, okay?
No. Yeah. He's got two small wheels on the front and one wheel in the back.
Really?
Yeah. Or it's the opposite. I forget which way it goes, but he's only got three. I was actually thinking about that during the episode. I was like, you know, I wonder how medieval wheelchairs would work. Oh, I guess that's how. They would use three wheels.
And even if he has three and Dany were to break that wheel, two would be enough for him to persevere.
Yeah, I guess so.
But medieval wheelchair jokes aside, I would have to agree with you, Neil. It's not about the destination. It's about the journey. And the journey was kind of shit for the last two seasons. But the destination, hey, not so bad. You know, it's like driving through Wyoming. You will get to Yellowstone National Park at the end. You're just in Wyoming until you get there. Like,
sorry.
Hey, sorry, Wyoming listener. I'm real sorry.
Not a whole lot of shit actually makes sense in that last episode. It's literally quite obvious that they made the season because they wanted to end the show two seasons ago, I think, is actually what was happening here. And now they're just trying to brush everything under the rug. And by the point at which we hit episode six in this final season, fucking nothing makes logical sense. Like, nothing. If you start to think too much about anything, none of it makes sense.
Have I not thought too hard about anything then? I'm gonna give my honest opinion, my weird hot take. I enjoyed it. I've got no complaints. I've got nothing I would really fix or change. Because what would anyone change or fix? A lot of people are saying, oh, I hated it. I'm like, cool. Why? Well, because it was sucked. Cool.
Okay.
Give me something to work with.
All right. Yeah.
If I'm really going to open the floodgates, and this is coming from someone that doesn't necessarily actually hate it so much as just thinks that, like, they have thrown away a lot of work that they established in past seasons. Oh, go ahead.
A single interruption before we start on this to our 3-minute listener who just dropped back in because of spoilers. This is a courtesy that maybe another 5 minutes might be prudent. All right. Thanks for listening. I hope you picked this minute mark and not 30 seconds later. All right.
Okay. So there's a few things that come into play here, of which I would say that George R. R. Martin, as an author, tends to have, we'll say, like, rewarding character arcs in which characters are built and developed and reach some sort of conclusion that is fitting to not only, like, what they are known to have done in before their introduction to the series, like, what their storied, if you will, what their history is, but also the journey at which takes them to the resolution.
Okay, so I have a question then.
Sure.
Is your bias going to be based off of what you know about the books? Are you just judging it based on the show?
I think it's fair to judge it on both sides. If you want me to stay on just the show, then I actually have one amazing argument for that.
I just wanted to make sure I was going to keep up.
Yeah.
I haven't read the books, so I just can only go off of just the show.
Which I honestly don't think the excuse that I keep hearing people say is that this isn't for the book readers is kind of flimsy, because I think a lot of the people getting upset are actually I don't think there are actually that many show watchers in relation to book readers in relation to show watchers. Like, yeah. I would venture a guess that maybe 15% of the show watchers
read the books,
which
if not less.
May even books. Yeah, yeah, may even be an aggressive percentage.
And, yeah,
and
maybe
Cookie and I might not even be in the didn't read the books, but like won't read the books camp.
Weirdly enough, read the first book.
Okay.
Really well written. Really good. Not going to read the rest of them because they came out with a TV show.
The Night King is a character that is show only at this point. The Night King is built up with having very mysterious motivations in which that the Night King is created by the children of the forest. And there's a lot of mystery as to why they... I mean, like, we know why they need Craster's children to make more, like, not whites, but White Walkers, right? But what is the actual purpose of this conflict? And what is the purpose of them going south of the wall? And why were they never able to go south of the wall before? Was it purely having the dragon that allowed them to? Apparently,
no.
It seems to be that the wall or the destruction of the wall was keeping, or the wall before it was destroyed, was keeping them from going south, correct?
I thought they assaulted the gate at one point in time in like season 6.
No, that was the Wildlings. I read it more as this just happened to be, since it was the longest summer, North thawed out enough for the White Walkers to come back. Hence the very first episode when we're getting glimpses of the White Walkers being there.
So
it's kind of them amassing and building power throughout these 6 seasons to go, was kind of how I was thinking it was.
So you're putting in a lot of thought about the White Walkers, right? And I think
that's... Not really. Their motivation, I could care less. I got to see a cool fight scene.
But that's the whole thing. Like, you don't write a conflict without having reason for the conflict. We have no idea why the White Walkers or the Night King is going south of the wall. We don't really have any justification. And when given the opportunity to provide anything, there is a very good moment where you have Bran and the Night King, or whatever you want to call him, in the same courtyard, and not like through magic mind fuckery either. They are literally inside of Winterfell together. You have a moment where even unspoken discussion could be held. Bran could realize or be like told something through the Night King, right? Any of these possible things with the character that, I repeat, is show only. Only to be fucking stabbed. And I'm not saying it's bad that Arya did this. I think they gave purpose for Arya's entire story arc and being an assassin and stuff. At least further payoff. But they take the one chance at which they can give you some satisfying plot or conclusion as to why any of this major plot point that is built up, as you put it, from season 1 and literally just push it back under the rug.
Dude, this is America. We don't need a reason to go to war.
Push it back
under
the rug.
We'll just say something. But I could see that.
I think also, it's a good point.
Yeah. So what would you have changed? I'm guessing you would have wanted that scene between them to be like, ah, that's why you are finally here, or that's why you're trying to wipe out the man's history.
No, I mean...
Because technically that's what Bran would be, is history.
So, no, I mean, there's a lot of theories as to what it could have been linked to in the past. And there's a lot of shit that we probably don't have time to go over. But first and foremost, you know about the king's practice of, or the original practice in the land is that kings have essentially the first night with your wife. That would result in a lot of bastards being born, basically, right? And what do you do with sons if you're Craster? You send your sons out to essentially become indoctrinated by the Night King or the White Walkers. There's a possibility that maybe that practice was born out of the original agreement of peace between the White Walkers and the humans south of the wall. There's some possibility as into why like why there is now going essentially tension or war between the two in that regard, especially when you consider that Craster gets essentially offed in what is that, season two or three, which further breaks any sort of semblance of the agreement between men and White Walkers. There's the theory that maybe at like, so the Crypt of Winterfell, I think I talked about this in another season, they're buried from the bottom up, right? So there's a possibility that Winterfell, as its name befalls, was the end of the original war between the White Walkers and humans, and that maybe the Queen of the Night is buried below. What would I do differently? I would explain anything if I had any idea of what was going on, but it seems to me that either D&D don't have an idea of what that plot is actually supposed to be, or more likely they've deviated so far off from the books that they can no longer actually incorporate that plot, much like the inconsistent narrative that they have going around with Bran, the Three-Eyed Raven, and the Lord of Light. It's just, I don't necessarily think there is a way to solve some of the problems that they essentially built up for themselves over the last three seasons. And I think that is potentially why people feel a lack of satisfaction when watching this last season. But I do digress that, like, even if you're going in for just popcorn entertainment, there are some weird scenes that just don't make sense. Like, as to why Grey Worm essentially allows this, the, I guess you could say, like, the Lordly Council meeting to essentially just completely fuck over his stance and fuck over the Unsullied. Like, Grey Worm's motivations are kind of weird in that he enters that council meeting with the intention that they want to execute Tyrion and Jon Snow, right? So
I could see that one as Grey Worm's a tactician, right, of his army.
I mean, maybe. Is he a tactician? I don't think we've ever really seen him.
I don't think he is, but he's the leader.
Well, yeah, he's right, definitely the leader. Army. He is essentially representing the Unsullied, as if, and the Dothraki, because otherwise no one's representing the Dothraki.
Right, because there are no other named characters.
But don't worry, it's because the Dothraki have basically all but been killed off in episode three, except there's still a sizable amount in the later episodes.
So they can commit war crimes at King's Landing.
But by episode six, they've all kind of calmed down quite a bit now.
They seem pretty chill. Once you get a little looting and pillaging in.
And let's also present you with, like Sansa puts it in such a great context that I was scratching my head afterwards too. And this was like upon my first watch too. So like Sansa's like, we have King's Landing surrounded by northern men. And it's like, first and foremost, apparently these northern men were like, who were not enough to handle the whites in episode three, are now stronger than the Unsullied and Dothraki. But let's remember that the Unsullied and Dothraki had significant, especially as what's-his-face, Finger this Onion Knight says, had substantial casualties in the battle between the living and dead, but were still more than enough to handle the ground war in King's Landing and storming Red Keep. I mean, but obviously a dragon does help quite a bit with that.
Yeah, which was...
The dragon does help.
The weirdest part about the siege...
My point is that, like, we have the Dothraki who obviously are not afraid to die in combat and would probably prefer it that way. And the Unsullied are dedicated to their cause no matter what in a similar fashion, although they're not, like, berserk Hellraisers. You're assuming that, like, however many weeks have passed, two or three after...
I think it was, like, a month or two.
Yeah, after Tyrion and Jon are imprisoned... They have essentially been in siege inside of King's Landing, because otherwise, like, what's actually happening there? That is the most logical conclusion to me.
That also makes sense to me as well, that he would accept their terms because it's been a while.
Well, yeah, maybe he would accept their terms since it's been a while, but likely the situation of them being in a month-long siege or whatever doesn't seem realistic to begin with, because you don't necessarily control the Dothraki without without Daenerys and Drogon. And like the Dothraki, maybe their priorities change with Daenerys dying, in which case, well, let's also mention that Daenerys was stabbed and then her body was taken away, leaving only Jon Snow and a small pool of blood to explain what happens there.
Jon is
an
idiot.
Yeah, but it's Jon Snow. Why would he?
Exactly.
He would have said, I did it. I kissed my aunt. I stabbed her. I didn't know what else to do.
It didn't I loved feel her. Right, Tyrion.
She was my queen.
The dragon, he melted the throne. I didn't understand, or I didn't realize he understood physical metaphor so well.
It just doesn't make sense that he would then agree to their terms to have this meeting and literally give all of the power in that discussion to Tyrion, who can then nominate a king that is related by blood to
the
your other prisoner.
And you
seem to act blindsided by the fact that Tyrion ends up becoming Hand again. Oh man,
I could see it,
buddy. Grey Worm, like, maybe Grey Worm's a fucking idiot.
I think Grey Worm is a fucking idiot, but that's just me.
I don't think he's a fucking idiot. I just think like that was bad writing on their part, or it was weird. They had at multiple times this season and maybe a little bit last season, but I think stuff that I can evidence a lot more clearly for season 8 is just like characters backpedaling on development or doing things that seemed very making decisions that seemed very unlikely for the characters that had character archetype they had established prior. And especially with us watching 8 seasons of it, it's weird to see someone do something very unexpected for their character archetype. Normally what we're seeing in Game of Thrones is surprising things happening, but it making sense within the characters the characters and their motivations that have been previously established. There's a lot of heel turns in this, I think, that are just kind of weird.
It's also just a matter of seeing the logical progression of the characters, as you put it. It makes sense if you analyze it as a whole and kind of take the human element out of it. So when Tyrion lists off all of the horrible things that Daenerys has done, and you also think about all of the personal tragedies she's done, straight, like anywhere from, if you want to take the extremely emotional side and say, this is a woman who has lost the ability to, you know, bear her own children from season 1, I believe that was.
She's lost her entire family.
Yeah, she's lost her entire family. She's lost two of her children, talking about the symbolic nuke children of dragons.
And her best friend.
She's lost multiple lovers and has essentially... I don't necessarily think that D&D or George R.R. Martin are necessarily pushing Daenerys as a woman and like as a woman as well as they could be, if that makes sense. Like as a human being, sometimes I feel like they push her more as a ruler / like political figure more so, if that makes sense.
Been her title, I guess.
What's that?
Like, that's been her shtick since the beginning was, hey, you are this tool for me to get more political power. Okay, now I'm dead. So now you are the person trying to get the most political power. You've got the stallion that rules the world. I don't think from the beginning they've been talking to her like she's been a human being until she started losing a bunch of people here.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't think D&D necessarily did a good job of actually encapsulating what type of loss a human being is suffering here as opposed to a queen, if that makes sense. Like, if you put into perspective a normal human going through all of these terrible things, it seems very plausible that they would resort to
burning an entire city down. Yeah, I saw it. I was like, no, that makes sense. I think at that point I would burn the entire city down.
I think some people that feel blindsided by it are essentially just entranced by Emilia Clarke's natural charisma, in which case I think maybe that's actually a good thing. Or it's like a good twist, right?
Mm-hmm. But it makes them upset, though.
Yeah.
That's the only bad part about that. I enjoyed that. Person that skipped only 5 minutes ahead give us about like another 4 minutes.
This is basically going to be the episode, I'd say.
Well, it can only happen once, because it's over, baby.
Thanks, yeah, man.
The Game of Thrones is done.
They fuck Jon Snow's character up this entire season, because he is, for the most part, someone that won't hesitate to act. And I'm not talking about the stabbing and hesitation behind that and asking whether or not he needs to. It's the fact that his exile to the Wall is, like, involuntary. Again, it's the circumstance of the story that they decided to write, but his character is not one that essentially yields to the choices of other people, or at least that's who he becomes. And the fact that he ends up yielding to the decisions of a king, despite the fact that he essentially becomes the new Mance Rayder, still feels like a cheapened resolution to his story arc.
It seems like it's what he wants anyway, though.
Well, like, but, right. But like, it still doesn't make sense. It feels like a cheapened resolution. The idea of Jon Snow becoming the second Mance Rayder is like it kind of justifies the reaction or the interactions he has with Mance Rayder in both book and show.
Wait, who's Mance Rayder?
Exactly.
He was the previous king in the True North.
Oh, okay.
King of the Wildlings.
Yeah.
Like, so that's a poetic ending to Jon Snow. But the fact that he gets sent there by a king to essentially do that feels like it cheapens the resolution, which I also don't think that's going to happen in the books.
But I could see Jon himself choosing to go back north.
Right.
To the Wall. Because
right,
that's
absolutely
where he belongs. So why would he fight that, though? Question.
Neil's argument is there could have been a way to have Jon go, well, I've really fucked up here. I'll continue north if that's all right with you.
it's how you approach the stupid 2 week or 1 month time jump. Like, that does not have to end with him getting imprisoned. I think this was just a convenient way at which they could be like, well, we're kind of stuck in a shitty place at this point in the series. Let's just hope that Tyrion's monologues, essentially monologues for the most part, because it doesn't really matter like what any of the other characters are thinking when they hear Tyrion speak. They're just like, let's agree with him.
He's speaking to the viewer.
Yeah, more so.
Or the audience.
But like, let's just hope Tyrion and Peter Dinklage can save our asses. And which he does, like, on a popcorn value, Tyrion nails it pretty hard.
I like it. That's the value I put on all my entertainment I watch. Because why dig deeper? All you're going to do is get depressed and sad.
But what's the whole fucking point of, like, Sansa's motivations are also really weird. And like,
Sansa's just been really weird ever since she got raped those couple of times.
And then they had the excellent writing of saying, oh, hey, that was good for me because it gave me character development. And everybody's just like hand on forehead. No, that is not how you should approach that.
It's that moment when she's like, Bran, I love you, but we must be free. Just like, okay, all right.
I mean, that is what he did. He shrugged. He was like, oh, the North kind of sucks. Like, I'm the three-eyed raven. I'm smart enough to know that we shouldn't give a shit.
And that's the whole thing is like, I mean, are we supposed to feel satisfied that Sansa gets her wish? Because she also gets it in a lessened or cheapened form. You only fucking got the North independence because your fucking brother is the king of the seven, now six kingdoms.
Yeah. Hey, man. Get it how you can. I guess. Yeah.
It's like the ending is just a shit ton of concessions.
Yeah.
Isn't that real life, though? Just a shit ton of concessions? I think maybe that's why I like it. Because it is just like, okay, well, this is kind of the hand that we're dealt. Let's deal with it the best way we possibly can. Yeah. To where everyone's just kind of, meh, I guess this is how it is. Because who in real life ends up like, oh my god, this is the best thing ever? Sure, that guy who wins the lottery is like, oh my god, that's the best thing ever. Then 2 years later, he shoots himself in the head in the back of a nice car.
I think maybe it's just weird because the Starks essentially like seize all the power and then just redistribute it amongst themselves, which is exactly how the Game of Thrones is supposed to end. That has to be noted that if anyone else took the Iron Throne, that's exactly what they'd do. It's just, I don't know, surprising, upsetting, or shocking for the audience to just be like, oh, so this whole family wins and they just get to divvy it up? And it's like, yeah, that is the Game of Thrones. They won it.
That's literally what the fat dude did when he got the Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that's exactly what the fat dude did.
But I think, so I just want to very quickly say that. It's not that there are bittersweet endings. That's not what I'm saying. And I don't think it's necessarily even a bittersweet ending. It's the fact that essentially all of the work put forth by characters, and it's not the fact that they're not getting what they want at the end of the episode. It's that, or at the end of the series, it's that they put forth a lot of work. The work actually doesn't seem to yield any results. But because of Deus Ex Machina, we still end up reaping the rewards anyways. That's kind of my issue. They build up to have a resolution, a similar resolution. They essentially chop off the head of that potential resolution, but then Deus Ex Machina, and they end up reaching the resolution again. Like, in a weird way, it kind of reminds me a lot of Episode 8 in Star Wars. Hey, Luke Skywalker's not really there, so he doesn't die. Oh, wait, he dies anyway. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like it. You're the first person to actually put these words into actual words for me. I can't disagree with anything that you said.
Speaking on the logical endpoint, like, don't get me wrong, I'm fucking happy that Bronn is the master of coin or whatever the title is. Like, that, mm-hmm. That's funny. And
yeah.
The book of A Song of Ice and Fire, which is written or helped... Sam helps write that, but it's whatever the headmaster is that actually pens it, doesn't mention Tyrion at all, despite the fact that he plays like a bunch of huge roles, from defending at the Battle of Blackwater and murdering
his father, the
once current hand of the king, etc., etc. Those are just points that like really clearly define that this series at some point lost its basis on logic and storytelling and just went into like fan service. Again, I find both of those points extremely enjoyable.
Yeah, they were very satisfying. The punishment of being the hand of the king again was great. Like the jokes or the lighthearted moments, I thought were the best part about the show.
And it more than made up for it, honestly. Like I said, I actually enjoyed the finale quite a bit. It's just, I do want to defend people that are not enjoying it because they definitely have reason to feel kind of cheated.
I could see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely does feel like D&D were way more focused on wrapping things up, moving on with their lives, and working on Avatar and... Wait, no. Star Wars, that's right.
Star Wars, yeah. But well, now it's time to close the heavy, heavy tome of a book on that. And we can say Fancy Ramen gives Game of Thrones 5 out of 5, no complaints. to you, our 3-minute, 5-minute, 4-minute, then later unspoken 10-minute listeners. Spoilers have finally ceased. So it's time for game talk.
Boom. It is.
How's that Oculus Quest?
Yeah.
So here is my thing. It's a little top heavy. But I think I can get the little modded strap for it. And I'm never going back to computer VR.
This is free motion now, right? The Quest
is
mounted to your body and you're good to go.
Yes, this is very much... So one of my friends who's been in my Vive, been in the PlayStation VR, been in all those things, he was like, man, this doesn't look nearly as good as the Vive. But fuck, you literally just put this on my head and I'm already here. I'm like, yeah, that's all it takes now. All I have to do is put this thing on and it's just a slight bump in graphical quality slight like degradation of graphical quality on like certain games, but just the ease of setup makes this thing worth it. And I want to say I've listened to a couple of different reviews of this thing, and they were like, yeah, well, I've listened to a few reviews of like the Oculus Rift S, and they've been like, yeah, like even though everything looks better, it feels like a major step backwards to have a cable. So one of the main complaints I had with my Vive with the PlayStation was, okay, I need to turn on my computer. I need to get Steam VR loaded. I've got to load it up in a very specific way. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Then I got to pull out, plug everything in, or get it all set up, and then get in, and then start going. Whereas this is quite literally like a console. I turn it on. It boots right up. It knows the layout of this room. So as soon as I turn it on, it just goes, this is the playroom, right? And I go, yes. And then it's like, bam, you're laid out. You're good. And if I go upstairs, it'll be like, I don't know what this room is. Do you want to make a space? Yeah, sure. What do you want to call it? Living room? Sweet. We're done. It's a nice 2-3 minute thing. So yeah, my only real complaints about it are it's a little bit top heavy, but it's something that I can get used to, and it's got a little bit of nosebleed through the light bleed through the nose section. But from the little bits I've played with it since I've been working on the deck, whenever it's like daytime, and then by the time it turns night, around like 9 o'clock, I'm dying and ready to go to sleep. But with the little bits I've played with it, I've done Dance Central, which was one of my favorite dancing games back in the day. It looks good, feels great. Done Beat Saber, a game called Bait.
What is Bait about?
It's a fishing game.
Okay.
I quite literally was tired, so I sat down, turned Bait on, and you're literally a dude sitting in a chair with a fishing rod, and it's wonderful.
Honestly, that sounds like the best hammock gaming experience I could possibly think of.
Oh, it's great. I will say, surprisingly, a lot of people have been complaining about like the sound isn't like the best,
mm-hmm.
considering there aren't any kind of headphones on it, because the sound holes just come out of like where the straps are. It's actually not that bad. There's just like the tiniest bit of thump, and that's just because of the vibration of the entire VR headset
mm-hmm.
right up against your face. But it took me like a good 5 minutes to realize the first time I put it on that I was like, oh yeah, I don't have headphones on. Oh yeah. Shit. This is kind of nice.
You're not getting a lot of ambient sound then from around you. Like when you put the headset on, let's say you decided to VR in your kitchen for some reason, you wouldn't hear the sink running.
Yep. If I put headphones on, wouldn't hear anything. But like Lizzie was watching what's the name of that show that she watches, Terrace House? So I was just hearing Hefu, Hefu, Sakai, just lots of cute little Japanese things every once in a while. But then like, and that was in between me playing Sports Scramble, which is a sporting game where they mix up all the sports. I've only played the tennis version so far, and
nice.
The weirdest thing was like, oh, yeah, after you.
It still has a headphone jack, though, correct?
It has two headphone jacks. So I've played it with the headphones on and without headphones on. I don't care either way. I ended up buying a Chromecast so that way I could stream to the TV. So if I'm streaming to the TV, I will put on headphones because the TV will actually pump out its own sound and the latency is about a second behind.
Oof, okay.
So they'll be able to see what I'm doing, but it's about a second after I do it. So mm-hmm. I throw the headphones on. Otherwise, I get whatever the sound is, then whatever the sound was coming out of the TV. But it feels good to be back in VR. I kind of forgot how pretty like actual VR was. I threw on before this came out, I had the Nintendo VR. And I used it for a little bit. It's the worst, but it's better than it should be, but it's still the worst. And I've done the phone VR. It's actually the worst. So as soon as I put this thing on, like, there was a little intro video they played. And you know how you see the stock can footage of someone in VR and they're like, wow, this is amazing. I'll be honest, there was a blue whale that swam over me and I kind of went, wow. I was like, oh God, I'm a VR noob.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, and the screen on this thing, I've never known what they talked about with the, in theory, I've known what they talked about with the screen door effect. In theory, it's like, okay, you can kind of see between the things. I've never really, really known it, what it was until I got this headset. Because everything is just so sharp and so clear, I'm like, oh, that little haze that was around, that makes sense as a screen door effect. But everything looked nice back then. Everything looks like trash compared to what this screen can pump out.
Hmm. Despite having lower resolution than the Vive.
Mm-hmm. Correct. But it's got a better display than the Vive. So it's got a better display than the Vive and the new Rift S. Which is super weird. But, you know, I like it.
So do you know if there is a way to use the Oculus Quest with, like, non-specifically featured Oculus software?
Yes. There is a way already, literally already, a way to get Viver on your computer. And you'll literally have to plug in from a USB cable to USB-C to plug it into your into the Quest and bootload it to be able to play Steam VR games. So there's a way to do it. I'm not going to do it because it seems like a lot of work, and then I'm tethered back to a thing. But they don't have a way to do it like wirelessly to where you can just put the Oculus Quest on and run Steam VR from that.
Okay. I get you.
But yeah, that's kind of my hot take on that. We're kind of late.
Okay, well, I think that can do it for this episode of Fancy Ramen Podcast, episode 119. If you have comments or questions, you can write into podcast@fancyramen.com.
Don't be afraid to tell your friends about the Fancy Ramen Podcast and listen to our very popular opinions on all of the Game of Thrones.
Yeah, please leave a like and review on your favorite podcast app. Apple iTunes or Apple Podcasts is the best place for us. And you can just title that review, Neil Could Have Written It Better.
Oh, you know, that's has a double meaning to that, actually. Two different meanings.
Yeah.
I could have written my argument better if I had a little more time.
Could have also wrote this episode a lot better of the Fancy Ramen Podcast.
I was even saying you could have written their review better. And there's a lot of, you know, possible meanings really baked in. And who will ever know? You can find out next time on Fancy Ramen, episode 120.
Have a good week, everyone.
Bye, guys.
Bye.